Ya bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Balabha Girivara Dhari. Gopi Jana Balabha Girivara Dhari. Gopi Jana Balabha Girivara Dhari. Jasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Jamuna Tiravana Chadi. Jamuna Tiravana Chadi. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Gopi Jana Balabha Girivara Dhari. 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 Jasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Jasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Braja Jana Ranjana. Jamuna Tiravana Chadi. Jamuna Tiravana Chadi. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jayo Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivitakacharya Astatarasata Sri Srimad His Divine Grace Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Gaurabhaktavinda Ki Jai. Srimad Bhagavatam. One of the sections that we covered in the evening and completed was the Brahma Vimohan Leela. And in the morning session, that's, you know, the classes at the temple, and then wherever else I've been since then, it's the Govardhan Lila. So it's like Braja, Krishna and Vrindavan. And in the Govardhan Lila, there's several chapters. It's a wonderful Lila, so it takes several chapters to narrate it all. And after Krishna lifts Govardhan Hill and checks the pride of Indra and delights the hearts of the residents of Vrindavan and so on, and then the torrential rain stops, he puts the Govardhan Hill back in place. Indra comes to offer his prayers. Surabhi offers her prayers. Everyone goes back to their designations or destinations. Then there's a whole chapter called Wonderful Krishna. And it's the chapter is the secondary rasa of astonishment. Rasa is five principal and seven secondary rasas. One of them is astonishment, that goes by different names. But the residents of Vrindavan are, their primary rasa is being overwhelmed or eclipsed by the secondary rasa of, who is he? We just saw him do Mission Impossible, and we all saw it, and how did this happen? So they start recounting the wonderful activities of Krishna, how he did this and did that and did the other thing. So who is he? He's not an ordinary person. Is he this or is he that? So they turn to Nanda. We have all trust and regard in you, and who is your son anyway? And he speaks of his son in a plural sense, that he's all your son. And here's what Garga Muni said when he did the name-giving ceremony. And so there's eight verses that are spoken for a second time in chapter 26 of Canto 10 that refer to the same eight verses that are spoken in chapter 8, the Namakarana ceremony where Garga Muni says what he says. Eight verses describing Krishna, and they can be, the verses are truthful, but not disrupting the sensibilities of the residents of Vraja, because Garga Muni knows they don't see him as the personality of Godhead. Their affection for him is too great, so he doesn't say that. He says things that could be interpreted in many ways. One of them says he's endowed with powers like that of Narayan. And he will protect the citizens of Vraja by those powers. And he says a number of things. So Nanda's take, as he's describing this in chapter 26, is he's my son, you have affection for him like your son, and that's who he is. And he's got some powers that Narayan has chosen to invest in him, and we're happy. He's such a wonderful son. Like that. So I thought it'd be nice to go back to another situation where I've been using this terminology. Sometimes Krishna draws back the curtain and he shows his opulence, his divinity, and then he closes the curtain. And then everybody forgets what they saw. They go on with, like, it never happened. But he's connecting with them because they're curious, and so he satisfies their curiosity. And then it says his potency is moving according to his will. So a similar thing happens in the chapter 8 of Canto 10, which is Mother Jasoda looking inside the mouth of Krishna and seeing the universe. And she can't believe it. So that's the section that we're discussing. So it comes right after, this, just this evening, we discussed two verses. 10, 8, 20, and 21. And Garga Muni has just completed this name-giving procedure with his 8 verses. And that lila is closed, and another one is about to open. Canto 10, Chapter 8, Text 20. Shukadeva Goswami continued, after Garga Muni, having instructed Nanda Maharaj about Krishna, departed for his own home, Nanda Maharaj was very pleased and considered himself full of all good fortune. Purport. Now, this is Prabhupada's purport. Krishna is the super soul, and Nanda Maharaj is the individual soul. By the instructions of Garga Muni, both of them were blessed. And here's how, we'll hear how. Nanda Maharaj was thinking of Krishna's safety from the hands of demons like Putana and Shakatasura. And because he possessed such a son, he thought of himself as most fortunate. And it's explained further. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, he who attracted the life of Putana and Shakatasura, that's Krishna, attracted the mind of the highly qualified Garga. Withdrawing his mind from Krishna and directing it back to himself, Garga returned home. Jiva Goswami writes, because of fear, that's fear of Kamsa, in this name-giving ceremony, they were very afraid Kamsa might do something. So it was held in a cowshed, and because of fear, special ceremonies were not carried out. Then, after Garga had departed, Nanda, in great joy, called his local priests, this is back in Braja, and celebrated the name visibly with a grand festival. Sanatana Goswami writes, Garga had showed that Krishna was Guru of the universe as Paramatma. Now, he didn't say that, but it's implied within what he wrote, what he spoke. The word cha indicates Balaram also. Adisha also indicates that as a teacher, he instructed them how to wear tilak, etc., the boys. Nanda shows joy after Garga went home. It would be improper to show his pride in his son in front of Garga. Question, was it not proper to show pride since Nanda was the best of devotees? And the commentary says, yes, he was overjoyed. And another comment, Jiva Goswami says, in front of Nanda, Garga did not want to show reverence for the child. He is cautious about respecting their mood of love. He didn't want to disturb that. Well, he also had to be truthful. He's a brahmana. So he's saying he's the supreme soul, but he's not saying he's the supreme soul. He's saying in very cultured and refined and careful presented language. Next is text 21. After a short time passed, both brothers, Rama and Krishna, began to crawl on the ground of Raja with the strength of their hands and knees, and thus enjoyed their childhood play. Prabhupada's commentary, one Brahmana says, gives the Sanskrit, quote, let others fearing material existence worship the Vedas, the Vedic supplementary Puranas, and the Mahabharata, but I shall worship Nanda Maharaj, in whose courtyard the supreme Brahman is crawling, unquote. For a highly exalted devotee, Kaivalya, merging into the existence of the Supreme, appears no better than hell. Narakayate. This is Prabodhananda Saraswati in his writings. But here, one can simply think of the crawling of Krishna and Balaram in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj and always merge in transcendental happiness. As long as one is absorbed in thoughts of Krishna Leela, especially Krishna's childhood pastimes, as Prikshit Maharaj desired to be, one is always merged in actual Kaivalya. Therefore, Vyasadeva compiled Srimad Bhagavatam, quoting 176 Bhagavatam, Lokasya Janato Vidvangs Chakre Sattvata Samhita. It's a celebrated verse, this particular verse. It's in the preface of every volume of Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavatams. It's Vyasadeva was instructed by Narada to compile, and he's described what he did, and so it's a very special literature under Narada's instruction. Vyasadeva compiled Srimad Bhagavatam under the instruction of Narada so that anyone can take advantage of this literature, think of Krishna's pastimes, and always be liberated. Prabhupada's purport. And here's, this is going to be kind of lengthy, because there's some references from the Sandarbhas of Jiva Goswami. So here's Vishwanath writes very briefly, Krishna's pastimes mixed with Aishvarya, such as killing Putana, and the unmixed sweet pastimes, Shuddha Madhurya Leela, are both presented. Both are worthy of remembrance by the devotee worshippers. Now, what does that mean? There's pastimes where Krishna is showing his power, his Aishvarya. And there's some pastimes where he's not showing his power. He's just having sweet exchanges with his devotees. And so there's two types, with a display of opulence and other just display of sweetness. So like something that's akin to his divinity or almightiness, that's the Aishvarya part. And then there's the Madhurya part where that is covered over by the sweetness, and they just, particularly the Vrijvasis, they just got absorbed in thinking of his sweetness. Shuddha, Madhurya Leela, both are to be remembered. Jiva Goswami's commentary. After having explained how Krishna was complete, Shukadev will begin to show that completeness. A short time after, so this is sequential chronology, a short time after breaking of the cart and the name-giving ceremony, this incident occurred. So two pastimes happened prior to name-giving. Putana and Shakatasura. Later, the killing of Trinavarta took place after the boys were 1 year old. It is seen that one-year-old children can walk, but the strong among them will walk earlier. Therefore, their crawling occurred much before 1 year. Shukadev reveals, you want to hear something that's kind of puzzling? But an answer to a puzzle. Balaram's birthday, Balaram's appearance day, is only a short period of time before Krishna's appearance day. So Jiva Goswami reasons they were born only a short distance of time apart because they're crawling together at the same age. They weren't like 1 year apart. Because after the seventh pregnancy of Devaki, Balaram was transferred to the womb of Rohini. And then some time was needed before Krishna took his birth, because the pregnancy of Devaki and the prayers of Devaki by the demigods. So what happened to all that time? And Jiva Goswami explains that Rohini had an extended pregnancy. Because he was waiting for Krishna to appear, and so that's his explanation. And he gives some the dates of things, you know, by lunar calendar, this and then this and then this. That's not here in this purport. But their crawling occurred much before 1 year, because Trinavarta killing took place after he was one. Shukadev reveals their great fortune because of the sweetness of the pastimes in Gokula at that time. Although in Gokula, within Vraja, there was also killing of demons as extraordinary events with a show of anger on Krishna's part. This will be revealed later also. Balaram's name is mentioned as Rama because his enjoyment in Gokula in performance of pastimes. Krishna is called Keshava because he controlled Brahma and Shiva by the sweetness of his pastime, or because of the first hair, Kesha, growing on his head, hung playfully. According to Mahabharata, the word Keshava is given in the following meaning, quotes the Sanskrit. Krishna says in Mahabharata, all my rays are called Kesha. Because of this, the best omniscient sages call me Keshava. Thus, Keshava means the shining one. The two are mentioned together to show that crawling together, they were attractive to the whole universe. Keshava's name is placed after Balaram's to show that he was the younger brother. Shukadev calls out to Parikshit with affection because of his being overwhelmed with prema on remembering the infant pastimes he is reciting. Alternatively, tata may be compounded with the word Gokula to mean father's Gokula, that's Nanda's Gokula, to show that the two boys played freely under the protection of Nanda. Jiva Goswami adds to what was spoken already, the Namakarna happened previously, since it should happen within 100 days of the birth. Trinavarta's killing took place at 1 year. Crawling happened before this time. Just giving this chronology, that's all. Putana, Shakatasura, name-giving, crawling, Trinavarta. So now some discussions from Priti Sandarbha. You know what the Sandarbhas are? He knows. You don't know. Okay. Sandarbhas. Jiva Goswami wrote 3 different commentaries on the Bhagavatam. One was like Prabhupada's, verse by verse, not every verse, but most of the verses, commentary. Then another is commentary just on the 10th canto. And then another commentary is according to subject. And there's 6 of them. Sat, Sandarbhas. And they follow, there's 4 that are dealing with sambandha relationship, all thing from their source, have a relationship with the source. So it's 4 Sandarbhas. Sandarbha is just the name of a particular style of writing. And then the 5th one is the process of devotional service, Abhideya or Dabhakti Sandarbha, the process of devotional service, the process of making that connection. And then the final is the fruit of that acting in one's relationship. This Priti Sandarbha, or Prema. We're commonly, in ISKCON we say Prema. Jiva Goswami liked the word Priti, used interchangeably. So the fruit of devotional service is the final of the Sandarbhas. And these are, this pastime with the crawling of Krishna, etc., and the delighting the hearts of the elder gopis, gopas and gopis, is a topic that he speaks, writes about. So in the first reference is, in his childhood, Lord Krishna was very forceful and arrogant when he stopped the Indra Yajna. Still, his actions delighted his parents and superiors. Lord Krishna's handsomeness and auspicious features gradually increased until they reached the apex of his full-born youth, Purna Kishora. The growing up of Lord Krishna is described in these words of Srimad Bhagavatam. That's the section that we're reading right now, 21 through 26. So as he's growing up, it's just covered, like not in detail, but some of the impressions of his youthfulness and the affection that was created. Then next is a separate section from Priti Sandarbha, and it's long. The gopis in Vatsalya, that's the elder gopis, mentioned in this verse are women the age of Yashoda, or relatives and aunts. At other times, Krishna's qualities, which act as stimulations or udipans, are his modesty, shyness, sweet speech, innocence, and generosity. Here's some illustrations. Mahabharat. This is when Krishna goes to Kurukshetra for the solar eclipse. Canto 10, chapter 82. Oh, hero of the Kurus, Shukadev speaking to Parikshit. Krishna and Balaram, embraced by their parents and bowed down to them, they embraced their parents and bowed down to them, but their throats were so choked up with tears of love that the two lords could say nothing. Priti Sandarbha. Though the elders thought of Krishna as an infant, when he showed boldness at the sacrifice for Indra, he gave the elders happiness, the beauty of his limbs and age, and his endowment of all wonderful qualities increased until full Kishora. This beauty is always present in him. An example of his beauty is given in the verse that we just read. After a short time, both brothers, Balaram and Krishna, began to crawl on the ground of Raja with the strength of their hands and knees, and thus wandered about, delighting the elders. And here's the final. This is Sanatana Goswami writing in Brihat Bhagavatamrita. You know what that one is? You're not sure. You're sure, but your mother's not sure. Okay.
We were listening to your live.
Okay. So the reference is from Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.8, 21 through 45. That's the section that we'll be reading. We started 21, 22. And 20, 21. Srimad Bhagavatam describes some of the wonderful pranks the infant Krishna shared with Nanda and Yashoda by his special mercy. Were it not for this unprecedented mercy, Mother Yashoda would be on the same level as Devaki, who also fed Krishna with her breast milk. So like we know in Queen Kunti's prayers, Kunti was marveling at the love of Mother Yashoda. Although she is like Mother, but she, Mother Yashoda is out of sight. She can't understand the love of Mother Yashoda. So the statement here by Sanatan Goswami is, without the special mercy with Mother Yashoda, how would Mother Yashoda would be in the same category as Devaki, and for that matter, Kunti. So there's something special. What's that something special? These verses that we're reading show that something special. Later in the 10th canto, 1085-55, while narrating how Krishna recovered his dead elder brothers, Devaki wanted her six sons to be returned because she heard these miracle things that Krishna did. So Krishna retrieved them. Sukadeva Goswami says, by drinking Devaki's nectarian milk, the remnants of what Krishna himself had drunk, the six sons touched the transcendental body of the Lord Narayana, and the contact awakened them to their original identities. That is, they had gone on to some other destination, they forgot Devaki, and by the touch of Narayana, Krishna, they remembered their previous existence as sons of Devaki. So, Sanatana Goswami says, this verse, chapter 85, canto 10, confirms that Krishna once drank from Devaki's breast. Right after Krishna's birth in Kamsa's prison, Devaki begged forearm Krishna to become an ordinary baby, and at that time he must have sat on her lap for a few minutes and drunk milk from her breast. Later, too, when Brahma stole Krishna's calves and friends, Krishna took on their forms and drank their milk, the milk of all their mothers. You know that pastime, right? Your mother's not sure about it. I'll say. You know that Brahma stole the calves and cowherd boys. But calves means, not the cows, but calves, because he was really young. So really young, like 3 years old, 3-4 years old, when this pastime took place. So these little boys, they were still taking milk from their mothers. Anyway, that's what is indicated here. So for 1 year, Krishna had manifested himself as likenesses of the cowherd boys and the calves. So the calves would take the milk from the cows. The bulls found affection for the calf like they had for Krishna. The cows had affection for their calves like they had for Krishna. And the mothers had affection for Krishna like their sons. So Krishna took their milk. Therefore, in the verse quoted as the present text of Sri Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Priksha takes care to distinguish Yashoda's special good fortune from that of Krishna's other mothers. Prikshit here calls Krishna by the name Hari. New paragraph. Indicating that by the motherly love Krishna kindled in Yashoda through his childhood leelas, he constantly stole her mind. Hari. And by speaking of her as Mahabhaga, Prikshit implies that she is even more fortunate than Nanda Maharaj. That comes out in Kunti's prayers also. It is common knowledge that children are more strongly bound by affection to their mothers than to their fathers. This general truth applies to Krishna also, as shown in the 10th canto by the descriptions of Krishna's infant behavior. especially in the pastime of being tied up with rope. We will hear some of these descriptions in the verses recited next by King Parikshit. This is Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Paragraph. Although Vasudeva and Devaki worship Krishna with devotion for the duration of 4 yugas and underwent severe austerities to gain him as their son, they could not achieve a trace of the blessings Krishna showered upon Nanda and Yashoda. Vasudeva and Devaki could not directly enjoy Krishna's pastimes of crawling about and otherwise acting as an infant. Pastimes great poets, headed by Sri Brahma, praise in song. And that's it for our topics this evening. Just to back up, the Bhagavatam is composed in like sections, even within one chapter. So the previous section was a name giving, and we heard that although this was spoken in a private way, in a cowshed with Nanda, it became known fact by all the residents of Braja. That is to say, they would refer to it. Different portions of what Gargamuni said. It became their way also of seeing when Krishna did something spectacular, how they processed it. Because Garga said, Krishna would have powers like Narayana. And with these powers, he would protect the residents in Braja. And then, you know, emphasizing their affection, because he is like your son, you should be very careful to take care of him and care for him and protect him. And, you know, all the parental affection messages were embedded in his instructions. So that kind of governed how what Garga said governed how the residents of Braja saw the opulent features, even after the fact, what to speak of while they were going on. While they were going on, it's like the Govardhan Leela. They were just like enthralled with being with Krishna, seeing him nonstop 24/7 for 7 days. So when it was over, and then they were, that intimacy was withdrawn a bit or covered over a bit by their reflecting on his majesty, this was how they processed it. They went to Nanda, Nanda explained, and so they were fine. And they went about their business. Actually, what they did was they had a big festival afterwards. A festival to honor Krishna and a festival to honor Nanda Maharaj with, you know, prasadam and gift-giving and praises. It's all just the pastimes are just movements. This is how we're to understand. Krishna has so many potencies, unlimited, no limit to his potencies. And the potencies are moving by his will just to enhance the love, reciprocate with the love of his devotees. And most beloved of his devotees are the resident of Vrindavan, and so it's the whole thing hits a grand crescendo. And it's just his different potencies moving here and there to cause what looks like danger, and they go, oh, and then Krishna comes and takes the danger away. And it's just, and so forth and so on. It's just exchanges of loving dealings through the agency of Krishna's potencies. And we heard a rather lengthy, I found it a little lengthy, description last evening, the Bhagavat Sandarbha, where the movements of Krishna's potencies are likened to a drunken man that's dancing. And then, you know, he's very careful to say, it's not like he's a drunken man. It's just to, but the comparison is to say, when a drunken man is dancing, he doesn't have any purpose. He's just like dancing. And Krishna, when Krishna's doing the creation and he's doing the things that he's doing, he's not trying to achieve something. He's perfect and complete within himself. But what is going on is reciprocation of love. And the love can be also with the demons, and he gives his mercy to the demons by relieving them of all their sinful reactions and giving them liberation. Well, it looks like he's, you would like to be my enemy? Okay. No problem. And so it's not like he's feeling inimical, although he may speak words that sound like that. He's just reciprocating with their regard for him. It's to help us understand the nature of the object that we're worshiping. He's a loving person. And the essence of everything is the bhakti that one feels towards him. We heard this morning, Varuna. The pastime when the agent of Varuna kidnaps Nanda Maharaj on the Dwadasi morning because it was technically not at the right time, but it was perfectly fine. Anyway, when Varuna sees Krishna, he stops everything, gets off his throne and worships Krishna, and says praising things, but he says, I have now come to the understanding that the bhakti is the essence of everything. I have all these jewels and opulences as a demigod, but yeah, I've never had this jewel before. So many lifetimes have passed. Now this having a body is now made complete. But one can have that good fortune by the medium of bhakti. And otherwise, you know, it's the struggle program. There's lots of varieties of struggle that go on. So the Bhagavatam is drawing us through these pastimes to our real shelter, the all-attractiveness. And if, as we just read, just by remembering these pastimes, hearing them, reciting them, maybe you wake up in the morning thinking about some of these pastimes. And, you know, that's the goal. It's a goal that's beyond salvation. It's what this phrase that we just read, Kaivalya, is a phrase that the impersonalists like. Kevala Advaita. You heard the term? Absolute monism. Kevala, and ours is Kevala Bhakti. Absolute bhakti. And this is to stimulate bhakti, and when the bhakti is stimulated, particularly the pastimes of Krishna and Vrindavan, particularly, even it's mentioned here, his lovely childhood pastime, which is this next section that we're reading, is celebrated by great devotees. Although it sounds like, in certain ways, it sounds like just the activities of a naughty, mischievous, playful boy. Not so different than other naughty, mischievous, playful boys. But this is the personality of Godhead. And his potencies are being exhibited. And then the latter section is, he shows his divinity by showing Mother Jasoda the universe is within his mouth. Then we're going to get into the universal form again. That's like a heavy subject. You understand the universal form? Somebody asked a question this morning. Who was it that asked the question? In the Bhagavatam, it gives the dimension of the universe. Is that the size of the universal form? Yes, it's the size of universal form, and also the universal form fits within Mother Jasoda's mouth. Very flexible. Smaller than the smallest and bigger than the biggest at the same time. Not, you know, expand and get really big and then get really small, and but bigger than the biggest and smaller than the smallest at the same time. That's not possible. It's contradictory. Besides, it's not possible. But that's the nature of Krishna. And most of all, not just he has these super fantastic potencies, but he's all loving. That's the most attractive. Okay, so let's see if there's some discussion. Now, yesterday evening was Nrisimha Chaturdasi, and the evening before we were at his home. Yeah. And your wife said a lot of people were on the line. 50-something?
We had 80 people.
80. You know how many now?
About 57.
So isn't this nice? Just like very peaceful. You don't have to do a whole thing with prasadam. And
57
So what we've been doing is the people who are assembled, they get first option to speak something or ask something, and then we'll go to the online questions.
I was just looking at the calendar today, and it said it was the full moon.
Yeah.
And also under it said Radharaman Appearance Day, which is why I put a picture of him there.
Ah.
And I was wondering if you could just speak a little bit about him, because he's so cute.
Well, speak a little bit about him. That's more challenging than speaking a lot about him.
Sorry?
Speaking a little bit is more challenging than speaking a lot. Right. Gopal Bhatta Goswami set the standard for deity worship in Vrindavan during his time, as he was most knowledgeable as the son of the chief priest of Sri Rangam. He knew A to Z about deity worship. And not only he knew A to Z, you know, like procedures and rituals and mantras and everything, but obviously his love for deity worship was so pronounced that Radharaman became a self-manifesting deity. I haven't seen, but I have heard from devotees that have seen, that have a relationship with the pujaris there. They have shown the backside of Radharaman, and it's the Shila from which he came. It's the bulging Shila,
yeah.
And then he manifested from the Shila.
So cool. Like popcorn.
Huh?
Like popcorn. Currently.
Yeah, I like popcorn. A little different, but like popcorn. So that he could worship in with dressing and ornaments and so forth and so on. And they have festivals where it's... There's a book that says what their festivals are, and it's nearly every day of the year where there's something or something or something or something. He has a certain dress and a certain something that goes on. A festival, not just a way that he's attired, related to Krishna's pastimes. And as Gopal Bhatta wrote this procedure on deity worship and all other rituals observed in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, which was given to Sanatana Goswami, who then organized it, and it became Hari Bhakti Vilas, which is one of the principal manuals for Vaishnavas. Following him in his line, during Srila Prabhupada's times, Vishvambhara Goswami, the descendant of Gopal Bhatta Goswami's line, because actually he wasn't a descendant of Gopal Bhatta because Gopal Bhatta never married. But the person who was, what happened was when he went to the Gandaki River to receive Shalagram Shilas on his way. You know the story?
In Nepal, Gandaki River. That's where it is.
Okay. Nepal. So, he stopped one evening at a Brahmin's home, and who wanted to offer him a meal, and so they took their meal, and they were discussing topic of Krishna all evening long. And then travel the next morning, the Brahmin made a request. He said, could you bless me that I have a son? Because to date, no son. And if I do have a son, I will make the arrangement that my son will come and serve you. So many years later, so that benediction was given. So many years later, knock, knock. I'm the son of Brahmin of so-and-so. And I forget the names. And my father said I should come and serve you. So it's that young Brahmin boy, who later became a grihastha, that's now the Goswami line from Gopal Bhatta. But in that Goswami line from Gopal Bhatta, during Prabhupada's time, was Vishvambhara Goswami, who had the same kind of regard for Srila Prabhupada as Gopal Bhatta had for Lord Chaitanya. That is to say,
could you clarify who it was who began the descending?
I don't remember his name, but it's the young boy who was the son of the Brahmin on his way to get the Shalagram Shilas. He spent the evening at his home. Please bless me that I may have a son. When that son was born, the firstborn son was sent.
Oh, he asked Gopal Bhatta Goswami that.
He asked for a benediction. Mm. Please bless me that I can have a son.
Yeah, oh, I see.
And when the son was born, he kept his word.
And that son became the...
He came to Gopal Bhatta, knock, knock. I'm here to serve you. My father sent me. Wow. Remember me? Remember my father? You gave him this blessing that he would have a son? That's me. Wow. I'm here to serve you. My life and soul is to serve you.
And his descendants.
And his descendants became the Goswamis.
We had that question, actually. We were wondering... Okay. You're wondering who the Goswamis were.
Now you have the answer. So, and then, of course, then they had families, and, you know, it's got a big clan up there. So, Vishvambhara had great affection for Prabhupada. Vishvambhara Goswami is the one that arranged for Prabhupada's room at the Radhadamodar temple, because the Goswamis have relationships with each other. So, the Goswami at that time at the Radhadamodar temple had a room, and Prabhupada was given the room. I mean, some lease agreement or something. And it was Vishvambhara Goswami that oversaw the installation of Krishna Balaram, because he was the most respected amongst all in the matters of deity worship, and he agreed, he was very happy, to oversee the installation of Krishna Balaram, a three-day festival. So, Radharaman, there's no Radha. And part of the reason is that Shalagram is not worshipped with Radha. Shalagram is Narayan. But they have a little crown representing Radha next to Radharaman. So Radha, Radharaman. So they follow all the vidhis. It's very interesting. They follow all the vidhis that's strict for Shalagram Shila worship, and at the same time, there's the sweetness aspect having to do with Krishna's pastimes that they honor in the way that they have their festivals throughout the year. And there's picture books that show different dresses and different ways that they observe the festivals. Sometimes they have him riding on an elephant. I mean, you know, a brass elephant, not a real elephant, because he's very small. And, you know, the whole, the pastime is enacted right there on that raised altar. And it's not a very big place. Pretty crowded when they have aarti. But the pujaris are very warm and friendly. I mean, they have their thing about themselves being Goswamis, but they're also, they're very approachable and very different than some other places in Vrindavan. And it's all in the line of Gopal Bhatta. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Guru Maharaj. So I have one question, Guru Maharaj. I'm always like, you know, bewildered about the liberation.
About liberation.
Yes. And so could you clarify me about it? And then after that, is like, you know, liberated jiva has to come back here or not?
Okay. When the word liberation is used, commonly it refers to sayuja, merging. It doesn't have to, but commonly it does. Because there's four Vaishnava liberations that aren't merging. You're familiar with that? Sa rupya, having a form like Narayan in Vaikuntha. Sa lokya, residing in the same planet as Supreme Lord, having opulences like the Lord, having intimate association of the Lord. Those are Vaishnava liberations. However, commonly, when people use the word liberation, it implies the merging kind, becoming one with. So when one wants to become one with, they can't stay there. If they, it's very rare to achieve, and if they can achieve it, there's no shelter. That is, the constitutional position of the jiva is service. There's no service because there's no object. It's oneness. And so after some time, they fall. Aruya krichchena param padam tada, from the Bhagavatam language. Because they haven't taken shelter, they want happiness of service, but there's no service. So they come back.
So, Maharaj, so if we, like, you know, merge, so...
Don't worry about it, you won't.
No, that means, so there is no our identity.
That's right.
So we have our own
identity. It's negation of the miseries, but it's not the positive happiness of loving service. It's incomplete. In that space, or that condition of incompleteness, you feel incomplete in you. But you can't. So, is it possible to go from Brahman realization, merged into this position of oneness, into the spiritual realm? That was a question that came up one time. And Prabhupada didn't give an explanation of how it would happen. But, you know, it's very rare, but it can happen. No, the only way it can happen is if bhakti is given by a bhakta, and that bhakti awakens, and when awakened bhakti position goes to the spiritual destination. But how is that going to happen? doesn't give, you know, an explanation of how it happens.
Is an example of that maybe like the four Kumaras? No.
Because they weren't merged in Brahman. They had realization of the Brahman feature, but they weren't merged in Brahman. Okay? Because she's speaking of some, you know, the merging with, yeah. Any questions online or were there's one? Okay.
This is from Uttama Bhakta Prabhu. He asks, one who is engrossed in Krishna thoughts and names during the day will most likely have Krishna and his devotees. Dreams at night, is that a fair conclusion?
It's in course of time, it's a fair conclusion. However, the mind is cluttered with so many other things, impressions. And sometimes those impressions are just with through passage of time. That is to say, time moves matter. And when time moves matter, then impressions that are stored and not active but dormant, they're awakened. So it can happen, you know, differently than how he said. So it's not... In course of time, yes, but not so swiftly. Of course, one can be not so advanced and have dreams of Krishna or dreams of kirtan. I know devotees that are involved in kirtan a lot, they have kirtan dreams where a certain melody is going on in their head, you know, because they're of kirtan absorption. And they're not yet fully purified. But yeah. Yeah.
This is another question from Uttama Bhakta Prabhu. Many times people say, show me the universal form of the Lord.
I never heard anybody say it.
Aren't we seeing universal form all the time, according to chapter 10, Bhagavad Gita?
Well, seeing notionally and seeing practically are not the same. That is to say, you know, the trees, we're looking out the window. Fortunately, in this neighborhood, there's some trees. Right in your backyard, there's some trees. Some parts of the city, there's you don't have trees, but... So the trees are as hairs. Now, it's not that everybody that looks at trees says, oh, that's the hairs of universal form. They're seeing something else. Just like some people see the deity and they see brass or wood or stone. They don't see Krishna. So according to consciousness, one will see or not see. Pashyati na pashyati in the Bhagavatam language. They see, but they don't see.
Raj, I had a question.
I thought you would. I'm surprised your wife doesn't have three.
I'm two, actually.
Oh. Okay, you do yours. Then give time for online people.
So Krishna's name giving, the chronology was
clear.
Yeah, and although the killing of Trinavarta happened before this chapter.
Well, but the chronology of the events doesn't happen before this chapter.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's being clear. That's why it's being clarified.
So my question was, before the Namkarana ceremony, before giving the name to Krishna,
How did they address him?
How did they address Krishna and Balaram?
Well, that's I don't know, but I do know that we read somewhere that even before events took place, like Keshisudana, Krishna was spoken of by the gopis as Keshisudana, before the pastime took place. And not that they're clairvoyant personalities or anything, but it doesn't give an explanation why, but it says that they did. And I don't know, Lala.
What about Kana? Kana?
No, Lala means little boy.
What does Kana mean?
Same.
Kana. Kanaya. Okay, Kana. Okay, I thought you said Kala. Kana. Yeah, Kana. Sure. Or Lala. Yeah, same.
This from Amara Mataji. Can Krishna's Aishwarya Bhav cause apathy in seva? Since he is not in need of anything and self-satisfied. Also, we are aware of our tiny position that we cannot offer him anything being impure.
Well, the first part, the offering is not because Krishna needs something. The offering is for the benefit of the person making the offering. Like offering him foodstuffs. Not that he's hungry. The benefit, so that's not even Aishwarya, it's just like, he's not hungry. So we don't offer something to people when they're not hungry, but we offer to Krishna even though he's not hungry, because it's offered with love. So, and then what to speak of opulence, anything, everything comes from Krishna, so anything that we may have access to is insignificant compared to the source of everything. So, the question is, would that be a showstopper for bhakti because he already has everything? And the answer is no. You offer things with love because it's for your benefit. And Krishna appreciates the love, and therefore he accepts something, although there's no need for that something because it's when it's offered with love. And then the other question, I didn't really understand it. Do you understand it?
I think it was just an extension of the first question. It wasn't a question. She was elaborating.
Okay.
Since he is not in need of anything and self-satisfied, and we are also quite tiny and impure, so.
Okay. That's it. Okay. Anything else?
One more question, I forgot, from Bhagavad Gita. So is Krishna says, you know, I am there, and at the same time, I'm not there.
Yes.
And we all were reading, and we all got confused. I don't know what does that mean. So.
Well, he's everywhere by his super soul feature. He's everywhere by his potency. But his Bhagavan feature is in Goloka. He's present everywhere by his expansion as Paramatma, within every atom. Like, Prahlad says, where is this Vishnu? He's everywhere. So he's everywhere. But his presence as Paramatma everywhere is not Bhagavan in Vaikuntha Loka. That feature of Vishnu is a kala, it's a portion of a plenary portion. That is to say, the fullness of Bhagavan is not found in Paramatma. Portion of a plenary, but we can say Krishna is in the heart of every living entity. Because that's also true. Vishnu is an expansion of Krishna, thus Krishna. But not in all respects, but Krishna is within the heart. So Krishna is everywhere. But as Bhagavan features in the spiritual realm, it had nothing to do with this realm. Even for the purpose of maintaining the affairs of the universe, which is what Vishnu does. He's simultaneously everywhere and not everywhere. Okay?
Thank you. Just one more.
Okay.
This is from Amol. I didn't understand what it means when we say Krishna doesn't perform pastimes to accomplish anything. Doesn't creation have a purpose?
Yes. But when Krishna does it, it's not like he's trying to achieve something. That's the point. It's not like I have a need and so I do something. That's me. But Krishna does something not because he has a need. He's reciprocating with living entities. So some living entities are desiring, I want to enjoy. So he doesn't have a need. He's reciprocating with their regard for him. It's not his need. So there's a purpose. It's twofold. Provide the facility that they can try to enjoy and bring them again to the proper position of their spiritual connection with him. Because to try to be enjoying separately, they have to forget him. So he provides that. It's not so. Yes, creation has a purpose. And what Krishna is doing is it's not purpose-driven. He's reciprocating with living entities. It's an important concept of Bhagavan. And this Bhagavat Sandarbha is teaching that, at least that section that we read yesterday evening, a long, long-winded section. And he goes over it backwards and forwards and sideways to make sure his points are clear because somebody might misunderstand it. You can say his purpose is reciprocating with living entities, but that's not his purpose, it's their purpose. And he has potencies with which he does because he's just very kind and loving. He doesn't want that for them. You know, So, Amol, I'll send you that section from Bhagavat Sandarbha and you can read it again and again till you can understand it. And I'm supposed to send another section on He's Atmarama but not Atmarama. There's a lot of this, you know, this is your question. Again, there's a lot of what I call Upanishadic double talk in the Vedas. He walks and he does not walk. He's within inside everything, but he's not inside everything. He's outside everything. He's near, he's very far away as well. You know, what's going on? Why create that kind of confusion? So it's a matter of understanding the transcendental position of the source of everything, and then there's everything that comes from the source. And there's a oneness and there's a difference. So he doesn't walk, but he walks. His walking is a transcendental walking, not like our walking. He doesn't walk, but he walks. He's within everything, so back to this one. You read the purport. Prabhupada distills it down nicely. Then again, there's commentaries that explain it, you know, for a different audience than modern people. But, you know, the detail is there. It's a very important concept. It's the foundation of Achintya-Bheda-Bheda-Tattva. One and different from all things. And it has to do with the source of everything and everything that comes from the source. So there's a non-difference from everything that comes with the source. So in that sense, he's within everything. But he's the source. He's outside of everything. he's not everything. Otherwise, it's, you know, it's pantheism. The tree is God. The rug is God. You're God, I'm God, and everything's God. That's pantheism. Because everything is connected to him, so there's non-difference relationship of all things with him, so everything is him. But there's a difference conception also. Send me a little note, because I've now got to remember at least two things to send. So you send me a little note for the third thing. I'll send you the commentary of our acharyas on that verse. I mean, it's actually the cluster of verses that go together. And if you don't remind me, you probably forget. But you'll remind me, so I'll send it to you. What? Two more. Okay, that's what happens when you have conversation. More coming.
I hope I understand. This is from Giri Votikota. I have heard sweetness of Krishna Katha, but even for a fallen soul like me, I guess this gave me a chance to hear the sweet story of the Lord in his childhood pastimes. Do we have opportunities in other lokas with these sweet crawling stories of Krishna and Rama, specifically other lokas other than Goloka?
How many do you want? Something that's spoken about in Ramayana is there's very little about Lord Ram's childhood pastimes. I mean, there's a Balakanda, but the Balakanda doesn't get into what he does as a little boy like he does with Krishna and Balaram. So speakers on Ramayana say you have to go read Bhagavatam to get Krishna's pastimes. So, you know, at least in Ayodhya there's not childhood pastimes. They're certainly not in Vaikuntha. There's no childhood pastimes in Vaikuntha. So I think he'd better go to Goloka.
This is from Pooja Gupta. How to engage oneself in each and every task of our daily lives, keeping Krishna as the center? Because as humans, we tend to focus on our daily things.
Well, sadhana bhakti awakens remembrance of Krishna, specifically the mood of service to Krishna. And if you do your day-to-day activity, you cultivate the consciousness of doing this for Krishna, then you'll be thinking of Krishna. And if you practice chanting attentively, that consciousness of Krishna will stay with you. If you hear very attentively, that consciousness of Krishna will stay with you. Now, the difficulty is we're conditioned souls and we don't hear so attentively and we're very forgetful and we're task-oriented and problem-solving-oriented. And so, you know, it's really no problem at all to get distracted. But by cultivation, then it's actually natural. We're in a diseased condition and we're not so familiar with the healthy condition. But the healthy condition is the natural condition. And the medicine is our hearing. So through the sadhana bhakti carefully, and gradually the healthy condition restores and it becomes quite natural to do whatever you do in your daily activities for Krishna. It's natural. Cultivation. That's it. Okay, we're done. Hari Hari. Prabhupada ki jai.